Hello there and welcome to another fine edition of Pass It On. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Once again, my name is Adam. Hello. And joining me on my left is the wonderful Jess.
Hello.
Jess. And to my right, we have James.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. Looking forward to this podcast.
Yeah. It's going to be an exciting one coming up. We're speaking to a whole host of different people. Speaking to people who do a physical activity like horse riding, which is very exciting. That's coming up very soon. We're speaking to an actual fully functioning proper artiste. It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah. Lots of very good skills in this one. Good range.
Yeah. So let's jump right into it. Who do we have coming up first then?
So I spoke to one of my friends, Tiana, and I've known her for a while. And I've always noticed that she's like doodling. There's so many different kinds of like drawings on a wall, and I just think she's got like amazing skills that, you know, I think people need to know about.
My name's Tiana and I like to do art. I've always sort of been interested in it. I'm like the more creative one in my family, so ever since I was little, but more recently it's more sort of like become more than a hobby. I like creating stuff. I like using like loads of different colours, making things that aren't necessarily real, or like changing things that are real, like fantasy stuff. I guess like making pictures of things that I like have imagined, it's a way of like expressing myself as well.
Yeah, I can see it from around your room that, you know, there's a lot of like stuff that you like to
very colourful.
I love it. So does anyone else in your family have this talent? Like, have you all sat and drawn together, or is it just you sort of, you know, drawing away in your room? Like,
It's mostly me, but my mum is, I think she either went to college to be an interior decorator or something like that. But my mum's quite good at that as well. My little sister has, she's starting to draw loads of things now as well.
So you're a pretty artsy family.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your favourite thing that you've drawn?
I think my favourite thing is probably I did a charcoal drawing of my grandma, my dad's mum, as a birthday present for him. I think that's the one that I'm most like proud of, or like that I think came out the best.
Yeah.
I think I used a pencil, so it looks like a normal pencil, mm-hmm. but it's just got like charcoal inside it, so it's easier to use than like a stick of charcoal.
Yeah.
Blending pen, like using your fingers.
So what do you prefer to draw? Is it like people, objects, fantasy?
I prefer to draw people just because it's easier to do like referencing. Like if you have a picture of someone, it's easier to copy it or like do it from memory than like a dog or something. I have done animals in the past, but I'm just not like, it doesn't appeal to me in the same way. I do paint as well. I used to like for GCSE, that's like mainly all I did was paint, but I like to sort of like experiment with like the stuff I use. Like I'm using markers now. I do paint a lot. I'm doing a painting for my mum's friend right now, of her and her baby and her best friend who died.
Oh.
I do a lot, and I'm trying to sort of like expand, like doing using colour pencils, paints, pens. I want to start doing like sculptures and stuff as well. I don't think I have enough money yet to venture into sculptures yet, though. Like, if it's someone's birthday, I'll have this thing that I don't like buying or writing cards, so I'll usually make them something and then give that to them.
That's a lot more meaningful, though.
Yeah.
It's nice that you put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of effort as well, so it's a bit better than that. But it also, like, even if I'm just doing, like, doodles and stuff, when I can see myself progressing, it means a lot more as well.
So that was Tiana's interview. She's pretty interesting, you know, she's got a great laugh. But so we talked about the different types of drawing that she liked. You know, has any of you ever done anything that you're pretty proud of that you've drawn?
Yeah, well, I'm not the best sort of artist at all. But I remember not too long ago, because my girlfriend has a young sister, and she's obviously at that age where she just loves to paint and finger paint and anything like that. So we had a big creative sort of painting session, and me and Steph decided to join in, and I sort of, we decided that we'd do a self-portrait. And Steph was quite embarrassed by her, because she sort of looked like a pink version of the train conductor almost from her Tank Engine. I don't think mine was half bad, but no, it definitely wasn't passable as what you'd call art.
James, have you done anything?
Not really. I mean, obviously at high school we had to do art for 3 years, and that was like my worst subject out of all of them.
Same.
So, yeah, but my auntie's actually really good at drawing, so I'm not sure if it's a thing that can be like passed on, because it's just that you've either got it, you haven't got it.
Yeah, I think it's a more inherent skill, isn't it, really?
Yeah, like you can have a drawer, you can't draw, like, I don't think you can really...
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can learn, there are classes for it, you know, life drawing and things like this, but I think it's always easier with drawing if you have that sort of jumping off point, like if it's a basis.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Then I don't think that makes it easier.
Yeah, I think you definitely need the skill to be able to draw, and like you sort of see things in a different way, don't you?
I think everyone's in our family just sort of is universally bad at art and drawing. I remember once I asked, I have no idea why, what the reason was, it was some homework, but when I was a kid I asked my dad to draw, I think it was an animal like a lion or a cat or something, and he did the old, you know, you like trace your thumb.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you're supposed to like, if you want to do like, I think it's good for like the shape of a dog, like, obviously, like the tip of the thumb works for the head, and then the rest of the thumb is kind of like the body.
Oh.
But it's like a really crude, really rubbish drawing. But yeah, so that's about as good as it got. But I remember when it came to like year 7 art, obviously taking that a bit more seriously now. You know, you're in year 7. It's not middle, it's not primary school anymore, guys. You know, kick it up a gear. And we had at our school, there was like an annual year 7's hat assembly. For a year art project in year 7, everyone had several months to design a hat in the shape of an animal. And so there were all these illustrious, extravagant... It was a big parade of hats, basically, at the end of it. And I remember all my fellow sort of cohorts, the other students, spent loads of time on theirs. It was great. They spent ages. Some kid had, like, a huge, you know, papier-mâché stuff, and, like, there was some kid walking around, like, a full bird on their head, and it was, like, really cool. But then I really wasn't fussed about art at that stage, so I really phoned it in. I think I started like possibly the night before the actual hat contest, and I basically got one of those like paper styrofoam plates, like a bowl, and I upturned this bowl and like coloured it in with felt tip and attempted to make that into a tortoise. So I was really terrible.
Please tell me you won.
I did not win. Unfortunately, I was robbed. Clearly, I was robbed.
So Tiana talks about that she created something really amazing out of charcoal for her grandparents. Have you ever used anything but sort of like the general paint and, you know, crayons to make anything, you know, for like a card for, say, Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthday, anything?
Do you know, actually,
I don't think I have, to be honest.
I mean, actually, pathetically, yes.
Have you?
Yeah, really recently. Again, with, like I say, my girlfriend's little sister, and getting her into arts and crafts. And so, actually, for this Mother's Day, they were making cards by hand. What they did, they had like stuff printed out, and then they had like sheets of card and, you know, sticking and gluing stuff on and glitter and cutting out hearts and things like this. And so because I was actually really, really skinned, I was broke, I couldn't, I actually, all my gifts to my mother for Mother's Day were handmade as well. I handmade her a
that
card.
That can seem nicer though, Kat. It's yeah, more it from can. The heart.
It can, but...
As long as your mum don't find out because you were skinned.
Yeah, so everything was handed, the card, the gifts, I made her some cookies, so that was all from handmade. I didn't buy it.
At least you made the effort though, that's
yeah,
like
exactly.
Really nice.
Yeah, but then the actual card itself, I used too much glue, so all the colour from my image ran. There's just this like multicoloured image of my family on the front of this card. It's really awkward.
So you didn't get an ace down out then?
No, definitely not. My skills clearly haven't improved any since the turtle.
So I also talked to Sam. I've known her for about 3 years, and I knew she was always interested in horses, and she's always been showing me photos and stuff like that. And she told me she's been riding for 20 years, so this is her interview.
My name's Sam Watcher, and I enjoy horse riding.
So how long have you been horse riding, and how did you get into it?
So I've been riding for about 20 years now. My mum used to ride horses for a very long time, and I think she just passed the horse riding bug on, really.
How long had she been riding before that?
I'd say a good 15 years or so, really? Until she sort of fell pregnant with me, and then I kind of ruined everything.
You ruined the plans.
I did. I ruined the plans completely.
So is it something that you've inspired others to do?
I hope so. I mean, when I finished college, it kind of led to a career in equine welfare. So I'd go and lecture at universities about animal welfare. I'd teach adults and children with learning difficulties, physical disabilities, would teach people how to care for the horses, how to ride. So I'd like to think some of it's rubbed off somewhere.
There'll definitely be some people that, you know, want to do it now.
I hope so.
So would you like to pass this on to your children or to any younger family members? Would you like to keep it in the family?
No, absolutely not.
No?
No, it's an expensive hobby. I think my parents have suffered enough trying to support me through my sort of riding and eventing career, so... Yeah, I'm not prepared to put that much effort into my children.
So, overall, what would you say is your favourite parts about horse riding?
My favourite parts are it's more of a way of life rather than a hobby. So the people you meet, they're kind of lifelong friends. You know, you see people on the way, and then when you get a bit older and a bit better, you end up competing against them. And it's just a way of life.
So what's your favourite memory of horse riding? Is there any specific time you've had where you've won a competition or you just had a nice moment?
So I'd say there'd be a few. So when you're growing up, in your school holidays and stuff, you'd have pony camps and, you know, all the memories of messing about and sleeping over with your friends and stuff like that. So then going on to producing your own horses and winning competitions. And then I got the opportunity a couple of years ago to ride around the Burley course. So, yeah, some big moments that you remember forever.
It does sound quite amazing, doesn't
it? I try.
So, Sam talks about that she had this passed down from her mum, and she's been riding for a lot longer than her as well, more than 20 years, obviously.
Yeah.
Has any of your parents ever passed any skills down onto you?
Well, I have been horse riding a couple of times.
Oh, really?
How did that go?
Scary at first, but it was quite enjoyable in the end because I was six, so I was a bit nervous. But my mum works with horses anyway, so I guess it could be passed on in that sense. So
that's interesting. It was offered to me when I was quite young.
Yeah,
and I don't know why I didn't go for it. I think at the time I recall I was pretty up for it, but that wasn't either of my parents. They have no sort of skills of horse riding that I'm aware of, you know.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, you know, my dad might be John Wayne for as far as I have no clue. But it was a friend of the family, and he was offering horse riding, and I never went for it. So clearly,
it was a good experience. Yeah,
it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had gone for it. Definitely listening to that interview, seems that she gets a lot out of it. But then it was interesting. She said she's inherited it. The skill, but then she says she would never pass it down. Yeah,
it can seem quite expensive, can't it?
Yeah.
I guess if you had just that sort of money around you,
I suppose it depends, doesn't it? On you,
because I mean, imagine spending all that money and then the child isn't even that interested.
That's it. I mean, it's a bit of a gamble,
the hat,
isn't it?
The boots, the outfits, you know,
yeah, the lessons and the stables and the upkeep. It's quite an investment to put that. And also from the other point of view, you know, from the kid's perspective, if your parents start forking out all this money for you and then, you know, suddenly you find that you maybe aren't as interested in it as you thought, or, you know, you don't have an aptitude for it, I suppose that can I can sort of spoil it a bit for you.
Yeah.
You might just feel like you have to do it.
Yeah, that's a funny one with pressure, that.
Because, I mean, I'm glad I didn't fully go into the proper horse riding, because as soon as I fell off, that's it, I quit.
Yeah, so...
I was like, I'm out.
Clearly, it takes a bit more resilience. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
I think I'd been doing it for, like, a while, and nothing came out of it. It was just the same thing every single week. Yeah. And I think I just used it as a way to get out, to be fair. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad that Sam won't teach that, you know, to her children. But, I mean, if it's something that she don't want to do, then...
She is doing some form of teaching, isn't she?
So. Yeah, I mean, she's taught, like, sort of disabled children, and she's taught at the university, you know, to try and get everyone to understand about horse health, like, healthcare and all that sort of stuff. So
that's good. That it's been,
I mean, she's passed it on to other people where she doesn't have to, you know, pay for it at the end.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's nice that she's telling other people,
carrying it going,
But, I mean, she said it was her, like, way of life and just not really a hobby. But do you have anything that you wouldn't class as a hobby? It's, you know, basically in you, you know, to do sort of every day or anything?
I'd say football, to be honest. I wouldn't, because people say football's a hobby, but it's not. It's part of your life.
Yeah, that's true. It's a whole culture, isn't it?
Yeah, like, if I didn't have it as part of my life, it wouldn't. Like, it is literally my life.
So, that's it. Yeah. I mean, like, for me, it's the opposite. It's definitely a hobby. Like, I've been to a few football matches because my family are quite... fanatic about their local team. But I've been to a couple of matches and I enjoy it, but I could never follow it the way that they do it. I mean, you know, to know all of these different players' names and all the different teams, and you know,
I think I was born into it rather than chose it as a hobby. That's why it's a way of life. Same with Sam, she was taught horse riding by her mum, so that's probably why it's her way of life.
I'd say films for me. That's the only thing that I properly sort of follow properly, avidly, you know, I get into is just, I'm a huge film fanatic.
Yeah.
You know, I could
what about
I'm
your music,
a huge
obviously
movie
you mentioned that
music as well, to a degree. But even so, I think movies were like the first love.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't live without like my favourite films and stuff. So
that's fair enough.
So is that anything, would you pass that down onto your children, do you reckon? Would you sort of carry the football through into your, you know, if you say I had
I'd force them to
kids.
Like football,
You'd at least try, wouldn't you? Yeah. Yeah, it's the same with my films. I'd definitely bust out the old Blu-ray collection.
You've got to start from a young age. You've got to educate them from a really young age. Yeah. Don't you?
And obviously, by that time, obviously, the format will probably be completely redundant. I'll be busting out Blu-rays. They'll be like, Dad, you know, come on, what are you doing? I'm trying to watch, you know, Lilo and Stitch 7 on this hologram. You know, get out of the room.
That's probably the way it's going to go,
yeah.
So Sam talks about her favourite memories, and she got to ride on the, what's it called? On a really prestigious course that she'd obviously followed, and I'm not sure if her mum had ridden there as well, but I mean, she thought that was probably one of her biggest achievements as well. Has any of your hobbies sort of led to, you know, one of your, like, your most amazing achievements or anything?
Obviously, like, my love of film has got me this far. I'm on a media production course at university. That's pretty, I'd say that's pretty cool. Like, I'm the first in my family to go to uni, so that's quite
It's a pretty big achievement.
To go
that,
from,
yeah.
Oh, I'm quite into films to, oh, look at me, I'm studying something to do with films at university. That's quite a leap to think about it in that sense. But no, for me, for the music side of things, like playing guitar, that's always fun. I've been able to do quite a lot of cool things with that. I mean, obviously, anyone with a guitar can sort of rock up at a jam night, but, you know, I've actually been lucky enough to be in and out of bands and, you know, play actual gigs and stuff around my hometown, and that's always fun. And on my own as well, I've played stuff like Tram Lines in Sheffield. That was fun. That's always a laugh. So yeah, it can take you some pretty cool places, I'd say.
Your love for films has pretty much got you into university, and you know, you've passed quite a lot, haven't you, sir?
Yeah. So for me, for those reasons, it's definitely worth at least trying to pass it on. I mean,
yeah.
Like I was saying, I don't want to be one of these that's too, like, pushy sort of fathers, you know, trying to, like...
Watch this film.
But, I mean, I'll definitely sort of introduce it, and, you know, if they go for it, great.
Yeah, I'd say in terms of football, it's more an I was there moment, like saying you've been at a certain match and telling people about that. That, in my case, anyway. So,
yeah, trying to pass on that sort of level of enthusiasm. Like, look at, you know, what I got. This was a great part of my life. And, you know, you could have that as well, sort of thing.
Like, when people talk about old matches, and I can say, oh, I was at that game.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of that sense of being proud.
Being part of something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But, I mean, I hope Sam carries on, you know. It'd be great if you could see her with the little kids sort of doing that, but, you know, she's taught a lot of people anyway, so, I mean, it's probably one of them amazing skills that you can pass on. And if she's passed it on to, let's say, in a lecture, There'll at least be like a handful of people that'll take it on board and you know, go with it. But I mean, it's great.
You never know, kids might hear about her horse riding in her day and get really jealous and then like beg her and like, you know, oh, come on, Mum, you know, don't be tight.
And she'll be sat there like, and I'll play her children that interview and I'll be like, look, your mum didn't want you to do that.
So now moving on from horse riding, we've got a fishing interview, and I spoke to my friend Matt, who's really obsessed with fishing. So yeah, enjoy this interview.
So these are basically fishing rigs. This is the end tackle. You know, here I've got a variety of different hook sizes. Sometimes small fish respond better to smaller hooks or bigger hooks. I've got a variety of hook links. So that's the piece of material that goes from your main line to the hook. All of the terminal tackle within these rigs is quite strong to make sure that it's appropriately designed to catch the fish which these rigs are designed to catch, which is large carp. My name is Matt Mosey. I've been an all-round angler for about 2 years now, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it for the whole 2 years I've been doing it. So it started properly 2 years ago. Previous to that, I did a bit of fishing on holidays, but I wasn't ever really seriously into it, and I didn't ever really develop any skills. It was just very basic stuff. And then in the summer 2 years ago, my ex-girlfriend's dad, who was really into the fishing at the time, he was quite a good match fisherman, he said, oh, do you want to come down to the pond? I've got some spare gear and you can have a go. And I said, I sort of jumped on the opportunity and said, yeah, definitely. We went down and it was a really hot day, so the fish were really on the feed, and I sort of spent about 6 hours just next to the pond, and he was teaching me very basic stuff. And I remember it very clearly because I caught 53 fish that day. And ever since then, I've just been really, really into it. So since that happened, really, after that, I went away and started researching it myself. Aside from him, the internet was a huge resource of education. Looking at YouTube videos for tips, Facebook groups, and asking other anglers. A lot of people underestimate how big the fishing community is, and it's a very helpful community. It's also one of these things that you might not necessarily know that people are into it, but it's got a huge following, and I think definitely the internet and him who took me on the day has been a huge spur on to, you know, keep developing my skills, etc.
So obviously your skill at the moment seems quite advanced. How much practice have you had to get to this stage?
Well, I mean, in terms of fishing, it's one of those things that you never, you know, I think everyone will agree that it's something that you never stop learning. You know, that every time you go to a different pond or a different river or a different lake, you've got to adapt your skills and use your skills from usually previous experience to tackle the venue differently. It does get quite complex. Things like weather pressure, wind direction, whether it's been raining recently or not, and also a dramatic increase or decrease in temperature are all things you need to take into account on the day. And then according to that, you sort of change your approach. It probably took me about 6 months to really, 6 months of going twice a week to really get a hold of understanding the different things you need to take into account on the day, and also, you know, understanding how to tackle up correctly for the day. So I'd say about 6 months it took me to get to this level, and then really, personally, every time I go, I get better. And even if you don't catch fish on the day, you know, they're the days you really learn, because you realise what you shouldn't do. I will try and find time all the time to go, because personally, it's something that really relaxes me, and it really helps me wind down after doing a lot of work. When I do go on the bank, I just turn my phone off and, you know, I don't let the outside world interfere. It does also depend on the season and if it's been in the weather, etc. But in the summer, I will go twice a week. In terms of skills, sometimes when I'm walking down the river, if I'm on the way to my spot, quite often I've seen kids, quite young kids, about 12, that are obviously on their school holidays, and they sort of say, oh, can you help us tie this up, tie up a rig which is a rig, so is the end terminal tackle of a fishing rod, where the hook is and the float is, etc. And I'll just sort of teach them a simple knot, and I'll teach them how to set it up correctly and how to hook the bait correctly. And as well, when I'm at venues and I do have a small chats with people, you know, they'll sort of say, oh, for this lake you need to do this bait, you need to put this rig on. So I think fishing is, it's one of those sports that definitely skills do get passed around quite a lot. Some skills, some hints are sometimes kept quiet to give them an advantage over you, but it's often not the case. Usually everyone shares their skills. In terms of passing the skill on to someone else, I've taken two of my friends fishing. One of them I took once, and after that he was mesmerised with the whole experience and ended up spending £100 the next day on new tackle. He probably goes more than me now, actually. He got really into it. So definitely me starting fishing has made at least two other people start. And I'm sure, in the future I'll be teaching, my children or whatever how to fish, because I think it's really important for personal growth and personal well-being, really.
So yeah, that was the interview with Matt talking about his fishing. Obviously, he has loads of equipment. He was talking me through some equipment at the start. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the interview?
I didn't realise it was quite as thorough as that.
Yeah.
I know my gran had fishers, and he had quite a lot of kit. Like, he has to load up the car. It must take him like an hour at least to load up his car with all the stuff that he's got. You know, his poles and his rigs, and he's got his tackle box as well and all that. But yeah, I guess I didn't realise that there was that much sort of, I guess, just patience that's involved with it, really, with having to sort of invest all your time and money into the kit of it. And that's just the kit, you know.
Yeah, it's something you've really got to love, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for 2 years. He said his ex-girlfriend's dad passed it on to him.
That's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, for him at the time, potential future in-laws.
Yeah.
Passing on a skill, that's weird.
But he's managed to keep the skill and master it.
So he got something out of that, that's good.
Exactly, yeah. It's nice how he's kept the hobby. Do you think you'd ever like to try fishing, either of you two? Or have you ever tried it in the past?
No, definitely not. from looking at you, I think if you were sat there, with a couple of beers, just sort of, tanning, just waiting for the fish to come, but it just seems so much more thorough than that. It seems like you've got to, work out which is the best place to put your rod and just all that sort of stuff, and you sat there for hours, just you could sit there all day and not catch a fish.
Yeah,
well, yeah, you can have a variety of outcomes. Like, yeah, he had 6 hours and he got 53 fish, so
that's it.
That's pretty impressive. That's like 10 fish an hour.
Can you keep the fish afterwards or not, or is it where you have to put them back in the water?
You usually have to put them back in. Yeah.
See, what is the point?
Yeah, but like, if you caught 6, would you really want 60 fish? I mean,
what do you
could sell them.
Yeah,
make a business.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I know my granddad goes on these like fishing weekends, and sometimes he'll come back like quite proud of himself. Sometimes he's barely caught a thing all weekend. So it just depends how it goes. I mean, like you were saying in the interview, a lot of it is dependent on weather conditions a lot of the time. So
exactly, yeah, too windy or
exactly. Which, I mean, there must be a lot of bad days for fishing
I guess that's to be like a perfect weather. I'm not sure what that is, but
no, it's a bit topsy turvy, isn't it?
And he also mentioned you were saying the thing about having a few beers and fishing. He's literally gone the other way and just had like no phone, no distractions.
Yeah, just pure fishing.
Yeah, so it seems really intense.
Yeah.
Whereas when I previously had an idea of fishing, it was not like...
I thought it was quite relaxed.
Yeah.
Sit there with a few friends.
Well, it's... I remember I had a bad time, because when I was young, we used to go to this campsite, me and my cousins and my granddad. We'd go to this campsite when I was a kid, Short Ferry, in Lincolnshire. We'd go, like, practically every summer. For years we went, and he taught us how to fish, and I remember I was real young. It must have been like one of my first experiences fishing, and I was there with like this rod, this like little kid with a huge rod, just like trying to catch a fish. I must have been out there for what seemed like an eternity for me, and then I finally got like a little pull, like a little bite, and I thought, oh, that's quite exciting. I was like struggling to like reel it in. I couldn't actually get the fishing. So my cousin who was around, he was like a few years older than me, he proceeded to, rather than, help young, vulnerable me with this rod and trying to, like, pull it back a bit. He proceeds to take the rod from my hands and reel the fish in and take all the glory. So, yeah, no one knows about the first fish I caught because it was technically his catch.
Have you been since?
No.
I refuse to go.
Put you off, has it?
Yeah, this territorial business, that's what I mean. It's quite... to this day, the impression I get is that it's quite an inclusive sort of thing.
Obviously, you say you went once every summer, whereas Matt goes, I think he said twice a week or something like that.
Yeah.
So
that is dedication.
So for you, it was more of a...
Tried
just
it.
Like, I don't know what to call it, like a day out, just a bit of fun, whereas he... Yeah. That's literally his way of life, I guess.
Yeah.
And he said about passing it on, he passed it on to two of his friends.
Which I think is good. It's important that he tries to, like, get that across.
Do you think you could ever learn fishing from a friend? Or, like, if a friend started to try and make you get into fishing, do you think?
Do you know what? Actually, yeah, thinking about it, I suppose, because, like I say, my granddaddy's really into it, and, like, my cousins, they've kept up with it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to, you know, after he caught my huge fish, jammy so-and-so. But, they go quite regularly together on trips, and I suppose I'm a bit jealous, because he's got, like, all these pictures in his house, my granddad, of, like, when they've gone fishing and, like, when they've caught, like, a huge fish. And, I mean, they catch some, like, real big fellas. So
yeah.
I suppose when I see stuff like that, I sort of get that sort of a bit of that, like, you know, feeling like, oh, you know, if I'd have been that, would have been cool, you know. But then again, you know, I get to spend time with him elsewhere. So it's not that big a deal.
Jess, what are your thoughts on passing on a skill like fishing?
I think you can try it out, but I think you have to want to sit there. I mean, it's up to you if you want to take it as seriously. So if you didn't want to take it that serious, I think you could sort of pass it on, you know, just sit there, have a chat.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the basics.
But I think to get into serious fishing, I think you do have to have your own sort of thing of, like, yeah, you know what, I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
You have to be able to, like, sit on your own for hours, I think.
Yeah, be quite independent.
Yeah.
I didn't think on that at all.
No, that's it.
I'd like to try it, just see what it is, but in a more relaxed environment, not like intense, like
not either, serious, just sort of sat staring at the water all day.
Alright, next up we have an interview where I spoke to the lovely Sue Royes. Jess and I spoke to her about her love of cooking and her outrageously talented food skills. She's a big fan of the whole farm to table sort of side of food, so she really got stuck into it, and she really sort of let us have it, didn't she, about keeping up with the importance of knowing where your food comes from.
Yeah, she definitely felt strong about that.
Yeah, so let's have a listen.
My name is Sue Royes. I am a learning advisor at the University of Lincoln, but I am also a smallholder.
So we're here to speak to you today about cooking. When did you start? Do you remember what the first meal you ever cooked was?
Well, as a small child, my mum, we used to have what we called make tea. And that used to be... macaroni cheese, an enormous, in hindsight, I don't know what she was thinking, a huge plate full of macaroni and cheese sauce.
Wow.
And we loved it, so that's where we started off. But some of my earliest memories were when I was very small, probably 4 or 5 years old. We used to sit or stand on a swing bin by my mother's sink and peel carrots and potatoes and take the leaves off Brussels sprouts and things like that.
Did you put little crosses in the ends of your sprouts?
My granny did, yes, my granny did, although I have latterly discovered, apparently, according to the gospel that is Gordon Ramsay, you shouldn't do this. I still think the jury's out, but yes, my granny certainly used to put crosses on the bottoms of the Brussels sprouts.
In terms of who or what it was that sparked your interest in cooking at that early age, was it your mum then? Was she your main sort of motivation?
I think it was possibly all my female relatives. My granny, particularly, I have vivid memories of her making her own puff pastry, which, to be honest, was... it was a bit like in jiu-jitsu when you're learning kata moves. Very specific. It was like a ritual, almost, for her. And I'm guessing that's how her mother did it. And her grandmother did it before her. Now, although I saw her doing this, I saw my granny doing this, we were never invited to do it. So with my granny, it was pastry. With my grandma, it was pickled red cabbage. With my mother, it was baking. So cakes, you know, fairy cakes we used to cook with her. And I do that with my own daughter now.
So exactly. So for you then, what's your sort of go-to? Is there a recipe that you know you've nailed, you have absolutely mastered?
I can't remember the recipe. I have a book that is my Bible. It's the Gospel. And it is the Biro book. From there, once you've got those basic skills,
elaborate.
You can almost actually get inventive and make your own from those basic recipes, rather like they do on the British Great British Bake Off.
Yeah.
The people on there, they are making their own recipes based on tried, trusted and true basic recipes. So the ingredients for a sponge mixture, for example, same as it's always been.
Yeah.
Those basic skills are now the skills that people like the Roux brothers and Jamie Oliver and Jimmy Doherty, people like that, are banging on about all the time now, because these are skills that were once upon a time you would have passed down from generation to generation. But as technology has changed and, I mean, you know, I'm guilty of this myself, puff pastry. Nobody on earth would make puff pastry like that, like my granny used to do anymore. Because the puff pastry you can get from various manufacturers is in many ways as good now. And the convenience stuff was very much seen as it's a quick fix. There is no social aspect to sticking a plastic pot in a microwave and sticking it. What pleasure is there in that?
No.
It is a functional thing. The body needs food in order to survive. So you stick something that purports to be food in a microwave. That's where memories are made. That's where bonding with your family, with your extended family, that's where the sharing of cultural capital comes in. Where, you know, granny and grandma and mother and auntie and nieces and nephews are in the kitchen and they're helping to prepare the Christmas pudding 3 weeks, 4 weeks before Christmas Day. Mm. And everybody gets a turn of the spoon and gets to make a wish. And everybody gets to grate the carrot. And, you know, and there's a full-on scrap for the bowl so that you can lick the spoon.
Yeah.
But I now have this cultural capital, this knowledge that I can now pass down to my girls. And it means then that, you know, if a little one gets to university or gets to, you know, being in a house on her own or a flat for the first time, she can look at eating better than just a tin opener.
All right, so there you go, Sue. Sue on her love of food. That was quite sweet, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. She really had like a big opinion about then and now and how different we are to sort of how she grew up.
Yeah, she seems really driven to certainly pass on. She says how it's important to pass that skill on, certainly to her own children. But I think she's enthusiastic on a level where she'll pass that on to anyone she can.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like she passed it on to me.
Yeah, she definitely stirred something in me when I was there. When she was talking about, you know, how she started as a kid, and yeah, I was trying to sort of cast my mind back at the time, like, you know, I was trying to think what was some of the first sort of food that I ever cooked, and it probably was the same sort of thing, you know, helping out sort of like with family meal times and just cooking in the kitchen with like my mum probably and stuff like that. What about you? Do you remember?
I think I was part of making the Sunday dinner once. I remember my mum and grandma just cooking, and obviously I was just being irritating and being like, please let me help, please let me help. Obviously I wasn't allowed to do the Yorkshires and stuff like that, you know, the fun part. So I think I got given the peeling job.
But then the old peeling job.
I think I sort of kicked off because I couldn't peel a potato.
Yeah.
It got really hard.
Yeah.
But no, I think after that, but I think I really enjoy cooking. So I think whatever me annoying my mum that day sort of made me annoy her even more, and so she sort of like taught me how to cook, and I think that's probably the first thing I ever made.
Yeah, I think probably the same for me as peeling potatoes. It's like a sport in our family because my granddad makes absolutely the greatest homemade chips that you've ever tasted.
They're the best.
But as we sort of grew up, we realised maybe they're so distinctive in their taste because he keeps the same sort of equipment in his kitchen that doesn't look like it's very clean, like maybe he hasn't changed stuff up for so long. Maybe
sometimes
it's just
that
got
makes
its own
it the tastiest,
yeah.
Though, yeah, doesn't it?
It's weird. It's like he's set in his ways, but it kind of works for him.
Yeah.
So props to him for that. But yeah. Do you remember what the first stuff you sort of cooked
was? I just remember when I was a young kid, I'd always want to be involved in the kitchen, one way or another.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd probably usually get told off for being in the way, if you do, but just like, yeah, the preparing vegetables and stuff like that, just little odd jobs, but still a contribution.
And
I just
buns and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. I used to cook cakes for my gran all the time, so... Yeah.
I used to make too much of a mess. I think I got kicked out the kitchen.
See, this is it. I was more of a cake eater than a cake maker. It was like my nan.
I was both.
But my nan used to make blancmange. Have you ever had blancmange?
I've not had it, but that does sound good.
I've never had that.
I don't think I've had it since my nan used to make it. It probably won't be as good. That's why. But so one thing she was talking about as well was the whole tradition surrounding food and how everyone sort of has their own sort of unique style when it comes to cooking.
Everyone has the secret recipes, don't
they?
Yeah,
that's it. I think that's why the whole sort of, you know, thing of celebrity culture with TV chefs works, you know, because everyone has a different style, you know. I think, she was saying, Gordon Ramsay wouldn't have her, you know, putting the crosses in the sprouts, but she, and I know my family as well, still do that. Is there any sort of traditions, food-wise, that you guys upheld?
I'm not sure, to be fair. I think I've just sort of been used to just whatever they've done. I've not really taken notice. I don't think I've ever cooked with anyone else. I don't think I've ever spoken about, you know, what they do.
Yeah, so you probably have your own sort of interpretive style.
I think I've probably cooked roasties once, like, differently to someone else. Or, you know, I think my grandma uses, like, goose fat on them or something, and it makes them so good.
Yeah.
And just sort of, like, cooking, like, a ham and apple juice, I think... Yeah. And then dribbling like honey on it, I just think stuff like that, you know. Don't get me started.
What about you, James? Do you have any particular methods?
I'm not really sure. Like the sprouts thing, does it really make a huge difference? I'm not sure what my family do. Yeah. We don't really have them at Christmas anyway, but like the cross thing, is that a massive thing?
See, I don't know because I haven't tried it without the crosses in, so maybe it does make a difference.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of sprouts. So.
Yeah, I like sprouts as well.
Yeah, I think they're underrated, very underrated, yeah.
Yeah, massively. Bring back the sprouts.
I think it's love it or hate them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but so in terms of passing it on, I'm trying to think of like a big sort of main recipe that I've inherited. To be honest, our sort of family meals were always sort of the same thing, really. They weren't that nothing sort of out of the ordinary. So I'd say, but when I met my girlfriend Steph, she started sort of like introducing me to a lot of different stuff. So like she's got some Spanish background, and one of the really interesting recipes that she sort of passed on to me from them was paella.
I love
paella.
That
yeah. I've had it once or twice. I made it in Food Tech actually.
Yeah,
so yeah, it is all right.
It's great. I love that, man. The whole, and that is a proper sort of family process when they do that. Like her nan has a huge, and I mean huge, like paella pan, like a proper Spanish,
like the ones you see on like the streets in Spain.
Yeah, and it's massive, and it'd take up like the whole, like all of the hobs in the kitchen. This huge pan, and she's got like the yellow powder that you put in there, and the rice, and like she puts like all the greatest like fresh seafood in there and stuff. You know, you get mussels and all the prawns, and it's the best, honestly. When she knocks that up, it's to die for. You got to be there.
What is it, an occasional sort of thing, or is it like...
Yeah, I mean, it's not very often, because...
like a treat?
Yeah, like special occasions. She often does it, actually, at her nan's birthday. She'll often cook that up for, if she throws a party, she'll cook that up for the guests, and it always goes down an absolute storm.
Surprised.
All right, so just to finish this off then, this section, who are some of your... We were talking about TV sort of celebrity culture with these chefs and how everyone has their own sort of unique style. If you had to pick one that sort of reflected your own either personality or cooking style, sort of, who would you pick?
I think probably for anger issues, probably Gordon Ramsay.
I think
I get very stressful and I sort of just like flip out a little bit. But I don't think I've ever watched him for his cooking skills, to be fair.
Just the entertainment.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been like, oh, you know, I love the way he glazed that cake, or, you know, no. Cooked that lobster. Do you know what I mean? I think it's more just for the entertainment of the show.
Yeah.
But I think with Mary Berry, I think it just reminds me of my grandma. So I think I like to watch her because she makes, you know, just things that are probably going to give you diabetes and stuff like that, and
just
you know,
the sweetest treats.
So when I get that and my foot falls off, you know, I'm blaming my grandma. But yeah, I think Mary Berry is probably the one that I watch just to, you know, sort of remind me of my grandma, I think.
Yeah. I would say I watch a lot of Hairy Bikers.
They're funny.
And again, it's sort of for the cooking, but yeah, it's the entertainment value. They're hilarious, those guys. Yeah. They're just so.
They're like clueless, aren't they? But smart at the same
but
time.
But yeah, they're hilarious. They're so enthusiastic about it, and all those little in jokes they have. They're so weird. Riding around on a bike, just cooking for random people. But what about you, James?
Delia Smith's probably up there because she owns the football team I support, Norwich City.
Right.
We were at this game once and she was sat behind me and we just ran, like, we just started talking about how bad the referee was. So, personality wise, I'm not sure about cooking wise because I can't really cook.
Just a casual chat with
Delia
Smith.
I've got a lot of time for Delia Smith, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, for this final interview then, I spoke to DJ Craig Bratley. Who's also a technician on site, but he actually is a wonderful music maker of such weird sounds.
Yeah,
and he makes some great beats. I've got to say, I love his tracks. Let's give that interview a listen. So when did you start getting involved in DJing and producing? How did you get involved in that one?
I first started DJing when I was about 15, and then it slowly progressed from there, from wanting to DJ to wanting to make music.
And was there any sort of mentor or early influences in the beginning that spurred you on?
No, it was just going out with. Obviously, the rave and house scene was kicking off, so I was just inspired by the DJs at the time.
Because obviously you grew up in Grimsby, so what was the scene like there?
It was all right, actually. There was one of the first all-night clubs called Customs, in the old Customs House, and we had quite a small local scene of where we all used to go, and then there'd be beach parties, and it was quite chaotic at the time.
Any big name acts you remember from Customs?
Who did we see? Everyone used to go there, funnily enough. Obviously, we used to travel a lot as well to go see people, so lots of adventures.
So as far as your skill level right now at DJing and producing, you've obviously done quite well.
Not bad.
Yeah, you've got albums out and you've done immense sorts of things. You've got recognition from Mixmag, things like this. How much sort of practice did it take to get to the level that you're at now? Or have you always just sort of had a knack for it?
About 20 years. It's not so much. When I was younger, I used to practice on my turntables like every day for hours, and then that kind of falls by the wayside as you get into wanting to make music, so you spend all your time producing. And then obviously when you've spent that long DJing, it just becomes second nature anyway. It's like riding a bike.
Yeah. So when and where in your life do you find time to do this? Like, and who else do you involve with your thing?
Good question. Most evenings and weekends I'm in the studio, so I have zero social life. And sometimes I get people involved to sing for me, but usually I do pretty much everything on my own.
So in terms of passing on skills and learning that's more outside of the standard prescribed curriculum, how significant is something like music and DJing in your mind?
Well, massively. But when I was at school, there was nothing really available, whereas now you've got degrees in sort of audio production, you've got Confetti Studios, you've got the SEE, so there's a lot of it around. But say when I was younger, there wasn't anything, so it was a matter of finding yourself, kit, and teaching yourself.
Alright, so there we have it. DJ Craig, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly got some good tunes. Obviously we had a snippet of one there, but he obviously loves DJing. I think he started at a young age, so.
Yeah, he started real young. He said he started on his decks as a teenager, didn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly, yeah.
I remember I actually had some DJ decks as well, but nothing ever came of that at all.
I think being a DJ would be quite a fun job.
Yeah.
But it seems quite hard.
Yeah, you have to really know your stuff.
And
I
don't like technology, so I'd probably break everything.
Yeah, what about you, Jess?
I think he seems like he's probably off his head, but I think it's... I think that's probably what gives him like his great sort of music style. I mean, I can when you hear his songs, like, I could just imagine yourself just sort of like in a beef air, him just sort of stood there with sunglasses on. Like, you can just picture it, can't you?
You can tell he has a lot of fun.
Yeah, he definitely has a lot of enthusiasm, and I think he's got a great job.
Yeah.
Sadly, he has to come back to England, you know, and just, you know, deal with us when we're breaking all the technology in here.
Yeah. But he gets to travel a lot with it. I know he's done sets like all over different places. I think he's played Japan and stuff, and I mean, I think that must be really cool to be able to. Again, it's one of these skills that just opens doors for you. You can travel, just globetrotting.
That's probably the best
DJing.
Part.
It's like Cassandra and her bagpipes.
You've got
one hobby, but you take it with you to other parts of the world, so you can explore different cultures while you're doing your favourite skill.
We should get those two together, you know, get them to do a set.
I think that'd be quite interesting.
Get them to lay some bagpipes down for a.
We'll do it for our end of third year. We'll have them performing at the end.
Get them to pass on their skills to each other.
Yeah,
that'd be a good crossover.
Quite something.
Yeah. So he was talking about as well the scene in Grimsby where he grew up. No, I've got to say he seemed reserved about that sort of point, but he said it wasn't bad. I mean, he said there was the first all night rave, but what about where you grew up? Do you think there was much of that sort of rave culture, DJ sort of scene?
Definitely not. not in Norwich, no.
See, because. From Sheffield, we had a nightclub called Niche. Have you heard of Niche?
Yeah, I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, that was quite big in that sort of community, but I think it was for the wrong reasons. They got shut down. And I think they opened up again recently, actually. But I remember Niche got shut down because of the whole, like, I think it was just the drugs culture. But what do you think about that, the whole culture of the sort of DJ and rave scene?
Well, I'm not sure if you can, obviously he does it in Grimsby, I'm not sure if you can judge it by the place itself. It's like the DJ himself and what he's, the club he's in, if he's making that an enjoyable place, and at the end of the day it's going to be good.
I think it's certainly bounced back. I mean, the culture for it now is huge. I mean, it's all over the charts. You get popular DJs like, you know, Chainsmokers, or Calvin Harris is huge. I love his stuff.
And he songwrites and
he does
singing
it
as well.
So that's a bit like what Craig does, you know. Like you said, he'll try and keep it all one man stuff, but then, you know, occasionally he'll work with like guest vocalists.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool.
So he's sort of, I suppose he's passing on his sort of melodies and working with other people and collaborating.
So it's
a good skill in that sense.
I think the scene overall is like great, because I think it's a different type of music, because it's always sort of like R&B, indie, you know, chart stuff, and I think it's nice to sort of hear something different, and you sort of get like a different bunch of people. I don't know if it's the drugs they're on, but you sort of get like a different atmosphere, don't you?
Gotta say they're probably not all on drugs, but I get what you mean, that sort of the dance vibe.
Everyone just seems happy, just sort of in their own little world. I think it is nice and different to see, because it seems better than the stereotypical club where sort of you have to dress like in, like, you know, your finest dress and your heels, and you sort of get judged of what you do.
Out.
But there, especially in the new one in Lincoln, in Jacked, this is the sort of newish night they have. That's DJs, and it's sort of like a lot of different types of them, but. All the people in there just seem to be having like a great time, and I think everyone just seems happier in there. It's a lot nicer than going into the club and sort of being dated because you're dancing like an idiot. You know, in there it's sort of like welcome.
It's a good form of escapism, isn't it? Just lose yourself to the beat.
Yeah.
But Craig says that he's been doing this. Obviously, he was sort of joking about. We asked him, you know, how long did it take him to get to the skill level he's at? But I mean, he says that he's been doing it for like 20 years now. I mean, that's definitely a passion for, isn't it? I mean, there's no wonder that we love the tracks that we've heard from him, because he's got all the experience under his belt. He's clearly perfected his craft, hasn't he?
I think it's something that he'd want to continue doing forever, really, because, like, he's done it 20 years so far, and the music we've listened to is still really good, so it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's obviously getting better and better.
Yeah.
If not, he's already pretty much... perfect, really.
Yeah, keep on trucking. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's interesting with I sort of had the decks but then didn't do anything with them. He's sort of self-taught with all that sort of side of things because he had to be, whereas now the climate for it's a lot more sort of accommodating, you know, with like courses here. Even, you know, you can do sort of audio production side of things, and there's courses you can do all sorts of DJ training and academy work and stuff like that. So I think it's a lot more all-encompassing now.
It seems like every sort of boy became a DJ, like, last year, do you think? Like, everyone was posting, like, new tracks, yeah.
Yeah, like a resurgence, definitely.
Yeah, I think a lot of people decided to buy some decks, and I think...
Yeah.
It's sort of... Sort of like a trend, if you know what I mean. I think a lot of people definitely tried to get into it. I think they saw him who made Animals, Martin Garrix, I think when... because Martin Garrix, he was so young, and I think he made that amazing song. I think that sort of... got everyone into sort of like the spirit of it, and I think it sort of like influenced a lot of people.
Yeah, you see a lot of breakthrough DJ acts now. I think a part of that as well is because of that whole resurgence of vinyl coming back as well.
Yeah, that's so cool again, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's back in. I mean, who knows, you know, what will be back in, you know, in the future, whether it'll be 80s sort of boomboxes, people will be like breakdancing in the streets.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Some nostalgia people want to feel.
Yeah, bringing it back and celebrating what was once cool is cool again. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, when Craig was young, he didn't have the resources, like educational resources, like we have now in this day and age. So I think that proved how much he wanted to be a DJ.
Yeah.
In fact, he had to teach it to himself.
Yeah.
And mastered his skill by himself. Shows how much he loves it, really.
Yeah, to have no one to sort of pass it on to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you think he could pass it on to other people?
Definitely, I think.
You could influence anyone in the crowd, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think that's it. With his music, obviously, he gets a lot of positive response critically and, you know, like we all of it. So I think I think definitely it's easy for him to get people on board. It's just, you know, I think it is inherent in someone like Craig passing it on because, you know, that's technically, I suppose it's what he does for a living, is passing on at least some of the technical skills with the audio production side of stuff. So... I think he's definitely going to be passing on at least elements of what he does for certainly as long as he keeps working.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that concludes our time and our discussion for today. So it remains for me to say thank you, Jess, James. It's been wonderful. Yeah, and thank you for listening. Yeah, this has been Pass It On.
Thank you.